Can you pray, ready? Let's just take a moment. Let's do our prayer and then go to verse 6. How's that? And chant from verse, our prayer and then from verse 6. Om Kataksha Kirana Chanta Naman Moha Deya Namaha Anantananda Krishnaya Jagannangalamurtaye Ahamasmi Sadabhami Kadachinahamapriyaha Brahmaevahamatasiddham Satchidanandalakshanam Mayevo de... Oops, I'm not doing my thing. That's,
I thought we were going to verse
6. Number 6, sorry. Unconscious. Number 6. Abharupasya Vishwasya Bhanam Vasani Dharavina Kadachinava Kalpeta Bhachahantena Sarvagaha Nahi Bhanat Prate Sattvam Narate Bhanam Chito Chitaha Chitsam Bhedo Pina Jasa Rate Tena Hamadvayaha Na deho nindriyam chaham, na prano na mano na dihi, mamata pariraddhatvat, akridatvat idandhiyaha. Verse 9. Repeat after me. Sakshi sarvan vitav prayan, Sakshi sarvan vitav prayan, Ahannaham kadachana, Ahannaham kadachana, Parinama paricheda, Parinama paricheda, Paritapai rupaplavat, Paritapai rupaplavat. Let's do it together. Sakshi sarvan vitav prayan, Ahannaham kadachana Parinama paricheda Paritapai rupaplavat Sakshi sarva anvitaha Prayan aham na aham kadachana Parinama aparicheda Paritapaihi upaplavat. Okay. So, the sakshi means the witness. We'll talk about the witness. Okay, but for now, just translate sakshi, nominative singular, as witness. The sakshi, the witness, sarvan vitaha, sarva anvitaha, pervades everything. Sarva anvitaha is all pervasive, it pervades everything. Sakshi, sarva anvitaha. That sakshi, prayan, is priyatamaha, the most beloved, aham. So, sakshi aham, I am that Sakshi, I am the Sakshi, the witness, who pervading everything is the most beloved. One by whom everything is pervaded is Prayalan, the one who is the most beloved. Then, na aham kadachana, never. Na kadachana makes for an absolute na kadachana. Never the aham. Now, never the aham means never the I, never the ahankara, right? So, I, the Atma, is the most beloved. The Atman that is all pervasive means the adhishtanam of all mitya, means what is actually there, this Atma, which pervades the whole creation, like the pot pervades, by the clay pervades the pot, satyam mitya. That on that Atma, which is myself, I am that Atma, which is the I am that self, which is the most beloved. Okay, so I am that witness who is the most beloved. I am never the ahankara. Never at any time does the ahankara have any reality. Parinama. Parinama means subject to modification. Parinama is a modification. Right? So paricheda is limitation. Something that has borders or boundaries or is limited by nature is paricheda. We use this word paricheda a lot in terms of defining in a negative way the nature of the self. Desha, kala, vastu, aparicheda, where the a negates the paricheda. That which is not limited by time, by kala, by space, desha, by time, kala, by objectivity, by namarupa, vastu, by thingness, this thing, this thing, this thing, this thing. So the Atma, Brahman, is aparicheda. It has no limitations of any kind. It's not limited by time or space, and it's not limited by objectivity. So objectivity means where this is an object, this is an object, it's not an object within time and space. It's free of time and space, and it's free of objectivity. Desha, kala, vastu, aparicheda. But the world is desha, kala, vastu, paricheda, right? Everything in the world is subject to space. It's limited. It's in this space, not in this space. It's limited by time. It's existing now, but was not maybe existing 20 years ago or will not exist 20 years from now. So it's whatever. It's limited by time. It is one thing and not another, right? If I'm this, I'm not that. So it's limited by vastu. So desha kala vastu paricheda is our condition as a jiva. This body, mind, sense organs, person here is desha, kala, vastu, paricheda. The Atma is desha, kala, vastu, aparicheda. Right, so they're actually, you know, in reference to all of those things, opposed. So that that which is subject to modification, and Shankara in his, I mean, not Shankara, in the commentator, it's not Shankara who's the commentator of this. In fact, I don't remember the name of the person who is. It's more recent than Shankara. For parinama, what is the parinamas that the ahankara goes through? Really, raga, dvesha, sukha, dukkha. You know, all of the points of identification brings about a modification for the ahankara. You know, so the ahankara, the I notion, is subject to kind of limitless parinamas. Because it's always identifying, taking itself to be something. So I am this, I am this, I am this. So the ahankara is continually modifying, actually, right? The aham is the same, but what the aham is goes on changing, so it's subject to endless parinama, because I'm taking all of these raga, dveshas, etc., to myself. So the ahankara is limited by parinama. By paricheda, it's one thing and not another, right? So it's limited by desha, kala, vastu. Paricheda is the nature of the ahankara, the I notion. And paritapa. Paritapa is suffering. Tapa means, you know, like fire, burning, hot. Pari means all around. So paritapa means hurt, pain, suffering is paritapa. The next word, so we've got this dvandva compound made of these three words, parinama, Pariceda, paritapa. Paritapahi is in the instrumental plural. So then the next word is upaplavat. Upaplava means like calamity or misfortune, you know, distress. So if I say, in this verse it says, the sakshi which pervades everything by its nature, it's sarva anvitaha. Anvitaha means like vyapaka, pervading. It pervades everything, vyapti or vyapta, pervades everything, and it is preya. Prayan, prayas comes from prayas. It is the most beloved. There is nothing more beloved. Whereas, that's who I am. I am never the ahankara, because of the upaplava, because of all of the calamities that the ahankara is continually enmeshed in. It's enmeshed in continually parinama. It's always going through modification and change, especially in terms of raga dvesha. It's enmeshed in limitation, you know. The parinama means the modifications. It's enmeshed in what is limited by nature, including the body, the mind, the sense organs, and all experience. So it's enmeshed in limitation. It's always continually identified with what is limiting. And paritapa, it's always suffering. There's always suffering involved because of the nature of the identification. If I'm identifying with something that is limited and bound by change, there is no security there, there is no rest there, there is no relaxation there. I'm either, you know, having a moment of joy and worried about the loss of it, or I'm having a moment of suffering, worried that it will not go away. It's the funniest thing. I'm so clear that if I'm having a moment of joy, it's going to come to an end. You know? And I'm not clear at all if I'm having a moment of suffering, that it's going to come to an end. Right? That doesn't make any sense, but that's the feeling. Because you know? I want so much the joy or the happiness, the ananda to stay. So then naturally I'm going to think it's not going to stay. And I want so much for the suffering to go. My fear is that it's not going to go. That's what's really going on there. And so in the raga dvesha, my likes, I have a desire, a strong desire. I want this. If the desire is not mithya for me, I want this because this will make me happy. That's why I want it. I want it so that I can be happy. If it's mithya, I want this, but if I don't get it, it's a fine because my wholeness is not dependent on it. But if it's not mithya, then the desire template is in operation. I want this so that I can be happy. And that's in knowledge, that is what falls off. It's I want this so I can be happy. No, I want to be happy. I'm superimposing the ananda onto the object. That's why I want it, because what I want is to be happy, right? And what about for the mumukshu when you recognize, you know, that's not going to work because you're wanting something that is temporal by nature to make you happy. But because it's temporal by nature, the happiness that it gives you is going to be momentary. And we also notice that all our desires are temporal by nature. I want that now, you know. But tomorrow I really may not want it, and then I'm stuck with it. This is the nature of samsara. You get something that you really love and want, and then you have to deal with all the doshas. The doshas means all of the trials and tribulations that are actually involved with having that thing, whatever it may be. Anyway, so here, when we say, going back to the first part, sakshi sarvan vitaha prayan, that the sakshi, let's talk a minute about the sakshi when we say the word witness. The idea of witness is a word that we use in the prakriya, the teaching methodology of the Drik Drisha Viveka, which we were just working on. When you have gone through to clear to the self through this seer seeing differentiation and realizing each step along the way that the seer or the conscious being, right, becomes more and more inward. Actually, in the grossest level, it starts with, I am the subject, this body, mind, sense organs is the subject, and everything else is the object. That's where we start. That's the fullest extent of our samsara. You know, I am me, the subject, and everything else is anatma, is not me. But as we go in subtler and subtler, we realize, okay, that actually the sense organs are the subject, because the body itself is an object, just like all of these objects. So we've moved inward in a sense, right? But then I have to move inward again, because I realize that the sense organs, even though they are instruments for objectification, they themselves are known by the mind. And when the mind is daydreaming or whatnot, those sense organs are healthy and working perfectly ready to be used, but they're not being used. And the mind can comment on the condition of your sense organs, whether they work or whether they don't work. So the sense organs themselves are objectified. So we go now to the seer, the subject, the conscious being, really being the mind, because the sense organs and the body and the world are objectified. So the subject is now the mind, but then we have to go inward. The mind also is objectified, because you're aware of your thoughts, you watch them coming and going. So now we're moving inward, and where is that going to land? Where you can say we can move inward to the buddhi, the one that can have a knowledgeable or useful conversation with the mind, you know, with a fluctuating mind, with the emotion. So the buddhi is innermost. So I'm really my buddhi, because I objectify my emotions, etc. So the buddhi is me, right? And the mind is just throwing up all kinds of chaotic experiences, basically, chaotic experiences and emotions. And so I am the buddhi. Now. But then the buddhi is known. The buddhi is objectified. So then I say, well, who's objectifying the buddhi? And you can say, I am objectifying the buddhi. Means I, the ahankara, me, the one who is this body, mind, sense organs, you know? The one who's the very self of the buddhi, I am objectifying it. Means that I thought I can say, I am the mind, I am the buddhi. So the aham, this aham, I say I. This I, when I say I am my body, I am the buddhi, I am the manas, I am my sense organs, that I, right? That I is me. So now all of the consciousness has been given to this aham. But then we realize that the aham, the I, like say if I say, I am my mind, I am my thoughts, I am happy, I am sad, that's a thought. That's the thought that we call the ahankara. When you say I am, that's just another vritti. It's another thought modification. Remember that the mind is divided into really four types of thoughts. The citta, the memory, the manas, the fluctuating mind, and the negative emotions, the buddhi, where your knowledge, your clarity is, and the ahankara. That, to me, I don't know, it was such a shocking revelation that when if I say I am, that's just a vritti. It's a vritti. It's nothing. It's just a thought. You know, I could say like, you know, this is an iPhone, or I am going to the store. All of these are objectifiable experiences. And you don't need to label. In fact, the label does not add to the reality of the experience. For instance, like Swamiji will say, okay, this object is here. See, this is a lamp. Okay, so lamp. Lamp is labeling, the word lamp is labeling the lamp, right? But whether you label the lamp or don't label the lamp is there, right? So it's the same with the ahankara. Whether you say I am, you know, or I, that's a word, that's a label. Of course, the problem is going to be for us, where does that I land? Does it land on me, the Atma, who is Brahman? Does it land on who I actually am? Does the ahankara land on me? Or is it functioning as ahankara, an inotion and landing on the body, which is taken to be me. But whether it's that aham is full of knowledge, means the aham lands on me who am Brahman, or the aham, the word I, lands on the body or the mind, it's still just a word, right? Which I'm aware of. Yeah. So say now, when we realize that actually everything about this body, mind, sense organs, all of my thoughts, all of my relationships, everything is objectifiable, then it no longer is ultimately the subject. So who is ultimately the subject? I am. I, the conscious being. This conscious being, from the standpoint of the what is illumined, is called the Sakshi. Only from the standpoint of the Sakshi, only from the standpoint of what is illumined. So when I say I get to what is innermost, either the Ahankara or I say the Buddhi, right? The Buddhi is known. Who knows it? The Buddhi is objectified. The Buddhi objectifies the mind. The mind objectifies the sense organs. The sense organs objectify the body. It doesn't go the other way around. So who is objectifying? Who is it for whom this Buddhi is known? The Atma. So the Atma, because there's nothing in between. There's nothing else we can conjure up to perform the function of knower known. So I am called, the Atma is called the Sakshi, the witness, initially, as we recognize that seer seeing division between me and what is the innermost upadhi, the innermost conditioning adjunct. But then the Drikdrisha Viveka is not complete at all at this point. If you stop at the Sakshi, then I become the witness. And what's wrong with the word witness? What's wrong with it is witness, if you say I'm the witness, witness has connotes knowership. I am the knower of the Buddhi. And so that would mean just like the Buddhi is the knower of the manas, and the Buddhi is the knower of the manas, and the sense organs. And the sense organs are this knower-known relationship, subject-object relationship is there, where we can use a word like knowership, which itself will get taken away later. The Sakshi is not functioning as a knower, ever. It is not a knower. So how to understand that? I am not a knower, but everything is known. Right? I'm not a knower, but because of me, the Buddhi is known. Right? That's the situation. We construct a knower. Right? We construct a knower, but actually, what the Sakshi is the word, the witness, the one who knows the Buddhi is witness to the Buddhi. That's what's conjured up when you say the word witness. When we get to that Sakshi, the next thing we do in terms of this prakriya is take away all of the things that are objectified, because the subject is not the object. So now if I remove all of the things that I've objectified, is the Sakshi, what we've labeled as the Sakshi, the Buddhi's not there, the Manas is not there, etc., etc., the world is not there. There is just me, the Sakshi, the conscious being, right? How am I a witness? What am I doing? By what instrument am I doing any type of witnessing, and what is there to be witnessed from the standpoint of the subject, right? Kind of like sometimes an example, it's a little bit of a not perfect example, but if I hold up a mirror, my face is reflected in the mirror. Okay? But if I remove the mirror, I'm still here, but there's no reflection, I'm not seeing anything in the mirror. Okay? I just am. Right? So that works a little bit. It has some flaws in it, but you get the idea. If I hold up a mirror, I see, I'm experiencing myself in the mirror and also whatever else the mirror is reflecting. If I get rid of the mirror, then this subject-object duality that is brought about by the mirror is not there anymore. Right? And so what if I get rid of, just hypothetically, get rid of all of the things that are illumined by me, that are enjoying the conscious being which I am, I get rid of all of those things, what is left is just me. Right? And so the Sakshi resolves into itself because there is nothing there for it to witness. Right? So now, when you think of it like that, when the mind is there, then it is as though witnessed, but not on the side of the Atma, not on the side of the self, only on the side of the buddhi that is there. Because the buddhi that is there is as though, because of sattva, as though reflecting the self, and it recognizes itself as being known, and of course there must be a knower if it is known. So this is how the ahankara is really set up, right? I become the knower, right? I become the doer, right? Because I have to account for this activity and I have to account for this knownness, because I don't take myself to be what I know. And so I have to account for myself as the conscious being which is there in reference to what is known. And so I construct that. I'm actually not the knower of what is known. I'm the consciousness, the conscious being, right, which is itself known as being self-evident. And so any vritti or any experience, any vritti, any sattva that comes into that knownness enjoys being known. But the being known doesn't belong to the maya, it belongs to the self. And the knownness of the self, the self-evident nature of the self, never changes in any way. You know? And so what is that, the nature of that self? So first of all, so we say here, so now I've kind of gone through the ahankara and the atma. In terms of sakshi, we say that sakshi, what is labeled as the sakshi, is sarva andita. It pervades everything, right? Because it is the knownness. It is the knownness of every experience. That is the nature of the sakshi. Without consciousness, there is no knownness, right? Because for a thing to be known, it has to come into a sannidhi, into a relationship. It has to come into the vicinity. It has to become close to consciousness, or how can it be known, right? And so there is no experience that is away from or separate from consciousness. And so consciousness itself is something which pervades all experience, or there would be no experience because there would be nothing known. Remember, we went through that in another verse. All experience is jada because it's objectified. It doesn't turn around and talk to you. You know, it's not self-evident. It requires a pramana. And so the pramana has a means of knowledge. The means of knowledge has to be in operation for something to enjoy being known. Right? The knownness belongs to the Atma, not to something that comes into being and goes out of being, right? And it has to be in the vicinity of consciousness to be known. So there is no place where consciousness is not. If consciousness is not there, then that thing is not there. You know, if we'd say if the sat-chit is not there, conscious being is not there, the thing is not there to be known. Right? So it must be sarva anvitaha. And then why do you say, if that's so, if it pervades everything, if that's my nature and it pervades everything, why do you say that it's prayas, prayon, the most beloved? And so in the commentary to this, the commentator says, he quotes something, a very famous line that we say from, what is natural to all beings, if they can talk? So just stick with the humans, but it's natural to all beings. It's, let me live, let me exist, let me not lose my being. I want to live. You know? I want to exist. Never do I want to not exist. So, you don't feel that way about anything else. No one else gets that. Yeah. Everything else, that feeling fluctuates. So, if I want to be, what is the desire template? I want this so that I can be happy. That's the desire template, right? I don't want this so that I can be happy. What I always want is to be. I want the unhappy experiences to go away. I want the stress to go away. But I don't want to be. I don't want to go away. The only time I want to go away is if I've identified myself with the stress or with the unhappiness. But I don't want to go away. I want to live, you know, one day longer. Swamiji used to joke about this and talk about this quite a bit. I don't have any fear of death. Be acting out. I don't have any fear of death. I'm not really worried about death. That's not a problem for me at all. I say, okay, well, let's die right now. Right now, let's do it. Okay. No. Let's wait a day. Yeah. Let's wait. Not right now. Not right now. Yeah. You want to be. If your nature was dukkha or pain, is that was your svarupa? Dukkha means what, not want to be, right? I don't want to be because it is painful to be. Then I don't want to be. But that's not my situation. I want to be. I always want to be. I don't want somebody to take my life away from me. You know? So my being itself, now, when you really start analyzing this, you can say, you know, my body is causing me pain, you know. I want to cure it or let it go, you know. I don't want to go. I want the pain to go. My mind is causing me pain. You know, it's such a problem, you know. I want it to change. So there's nothing really about your upadis that you don't want to change or perfect because you want to be. These things are getting in the way of my nature, you know. But I want to be. Edward used to tell me, or he just says that over the time, when he was a little boy, he would go and play in the creeks and the grass, and he was, you know, playing around and all that, and rolling in the grass and, you know, playing in the creeks, and he was allergic to some of the stuff in there. And so he would come back and he could not breathe through his nose at all. It's awful, you know. Some of us get that. I get that sometimes too, and thank goodness we have Benadryl and different things we can do, because I also can't stand it. But he used to be so upset, and he used to tell his mom, just cut off my nose. Cut off my nose. But because he wanted to breathe. You know, so I'll give up my nose if I can breathe. But it's, you know, life is precious. Your being is precious. We don't want to give up our being. That's even a person who seeks moksha, a mamukshu, like us, people who really seek moksha. It's not that I want to die or give up my being. I want to know, is there anything about me that is free of this samsara of sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha, pleasure pain, pleasure pain, pleasure pain? Can I just be myself? Because everyone knows, you've all had experience that this is me, where all of the sukha dukkha, all of the problems are not there, it's just me. And I know this is me, and I know this is how I'm supposed to be, but I keep losing it. I keep continually losing myself. Why is that? I remember when I was 17 or 18 or whatever it was, it must have been at 18 because I was just in college. For this is flash experience of just being myself and everything being right. Not even about anything external, just internally. Everything was right. And I had this wonderful feeling, oh, this is me. This is how I'm supposed to be. And it wasn't a big bliss pretty or anything. It was just everything was right. And I knew it so clearly. And then, you know, I started losing it. It's that my mind was closing over or whatever. I started losing it. And I was thinking, I remember thinking, oh no, no. And then I was trying to get it back, somehow getting back and to bring that back. And I realized, this all took place within a matter of seconds probably, but I realized I can't get it back. It'll have to come again, but I can't get it back. It's too late. It was like a bouncing ball, you know, and there was no way to retrieve that, you know. But all of us along the way, even though the mind is involved, it's kind of like a sukha vritti or a very beautiful shanta vritti is involved. I don't mean a bliss vritti at all, but just you get these glimpses of just yourself, you know. And then because it's those glimpses are associated, they're really brought about by a shanta vritti. That shantavritti, all shantavrittis are temporary. They're temporary. Even for a jnani, the vrittis are all, they're fluid, they're changing. You may not get these deep, dark vrittis, but it's not, your mind is still engaged, you know, in the world. We would say you have relative shanti. You don't have absolute shanti. There's only one thing that is absolute shanti, and that's yourself. And so why a jnani always enjoys absolute shanti is because the self is always dominant in the mind. The mind might be doing all kinds of different things, but it's rooted in yourself, which is absolute. So that shanti, the wholeness, the ananda, the fullness of yourself, is never comes and goes. But it's not like the vritti is always like a big giant shanta vritti or a big meditative vritti, but it doesn't make any difference because the absolute shanti of your being is there. But as we are growing up through in samsara, you recognize yourself, you have glimpses of the depth, the beauty of your own being, and it slips through your fingers. And at some point that really matters to you, and you want to know who you are, that me that I know, how can I keep that, etc. So everybody has their own stories around that. Hmm. You know? Not everybody becomes a mumukshu because they still think that they can go out and do something else and get that back and tweak this and tweak that and make that myself last a little longer, you know. But at some point you realize, no, that's not going to happen. It can't happen because of the nature of the body, the nature of the mind, the nature of all of my experience. So the one that is most loved, you know, and you always want to exist, is certainly not the ahankara. Because the ahankara, the I notion, is riddled with continual modification, with limitations, birth and death, and with the fluctuating sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, you know, and suffering. And so that I want to give up. So we want to give up the false identity, the ahankara, which is just all the ahankara is born of ignorance. It's a false identification of my being with things that are finite, changing, and subject to despair. You know, and I want to just be me. So give up the ahankara. The only way we can give up the ahankara is having it gain knowledge and being able to land on myself. That's it.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti. Shanti Shanti Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha.